And we lost in the quarterfinals, and the best we could have finished fifth. Our staff came in and was like, look, the job's not done. And they like showed us the numbers of people that were going to the USA Rugby website from like one day to the next day, because we played first before the men. And there was like a huge spike in the numbers when they're like, look, you're doing it. Like, we have this other goal of building the sport, leaving a legacy where the sport's in a better place. So that was pretty cool. And, you know, Matthew McConaughey came to our games. I feel like if he's there, you're making an impact. I'm Kelly Griffin, and you're listening to the Rugby Hive.
He's so dangerous, Freddy Krueger has nightmares about him.
Hello and welcome to the Rugby Hive. I'm down in Stanford, and despite my South African accent, I was fortunate enough to play rugby for the United States on the Sevens World Series.
And I'm Robin McDougall, a former Canadian Sevens international. Back in my playing days, I went head-to-head against Dallin in the USA.
For several years, Robin has coached international sevens for various countries, including Canada and Mexico. He's massively passionate about growing the game across the Americas through his McDougall Rugby programs at all levels. I'm currently a commentator for World Rugby, most recently broadcasting the Rugby World Cup in Japan, as well as the amazing Sevens World Series.
More than a decade later, we are teaming up to bring you insights from legendary players and coaches from around the world.
All legends have a story. The Rugby Hive podcast is here to share it.
Welcome to the Hive.
Hello and welcome back to Season 3 of the Rugby Hive. We had a fantastic launch of the new season with South African Sevens captain Shake Soy's Wappy, an episode which explored the thrilling HSBC World Rugby Sevens Series plus the Rugby World Cup Sevens, which took place in my former home, Cape Town. Today's guest, another classic, but before we get into the United States, is Kelly Griffin. We must introduce the Freddie Mercury of stashes, one that has wreaked havoc with your face, Robin. That is sensational, and that's only a few weeks' growth.
Well, thankfully, up in Canada here, it's been an early winter. We've had snow. We've had minus on the West Coast. So it's been great for Movember growing.
Tell me, buddy, who are you supporting? How many millions have you raised? And what can people do to help you out?
Yeah, so Movember, I think I did it the first time 8-9 years ago. So I'm an 8-9 year Mo bro. But this year hits a little closer to home, I think, on the backside of the pandemic. A lot of rugby brothers, you know, it's not been easy on anybody. But we've actually lost a couple of really good rugby friends of mine, teammates and opposition that I've grown up playing against either locally here and a gentleman from Calgary. So we've lost them to suicide. So for me, just wanted to raise awareness to keep the conversation going. We've lost a couple older rugby brothers to cancer and some various illnesses. So I just kind of growing it in honor of those guys and honor of just awareness of men's health. Yeah, hits a little closer to home this year. But yeah, if you want to support the cause, I would actually say not support Movember so much as financially there, but Canadian international sevens player Dallin that you've called Nick Allen actually just recently got in a car accident wreck in Indonesia in the last few days. So if you go to GoFundMe or Rugby Canada's website or Facebook, you'll be able to find a link to Nick Allen, Canadian sevens star that featured even like this year on the World Series. He's actually battling for his life right now. So if you could send your funds that way to support him, then that would be wonderful. And thanks for the shout out, Dallin.
Yeah, definitely send us in our message of support and we'll get to help our Nick online. I love what you're doing that side, Rob. It looks good. And I know people would appreciate all the support you're doing in the rugby community. We also want to thank our support base as well here at the Rugby Hive. We've got some great partners we want to shout out. Firstly, World Rugby Shop, of course, they make our sleek merch. And we know that you just need to go to worldrugbyshop.com and hit Rugby Hive in the search bar. Perfect for Christmas, which is just around the corner. Well, a couple little gifts as well. And then Gilbert Rugby Canada, we've got our Rugby Hive inspired ball at gilbertrugbycanada.com. Enduro Sport, the premium daily supplement that keeps you focused, hydrated, and energized for hours on end. Get 40% off at rugbyhive.endurosportofficial.com. And then our two favorite Biltong partners, we've got Bruce Biltong in the United States, supplied me with more snacks than a mouse, brucebiltong.com. And Canada Biltong, of course, run by another South African legend, CanadaBiltong.com. Get your stuff there. Brilliant to see. The Rugby Network, we appreciate them showing, of course, all our episodes. If you like watching them on YouTube or the Rugby Network, check it out. And then we're always open to new partners, sponsors. So message us. You get your brand or business featured on one of the top rugby podcasts in the world. You're welcome, my friend. Okay, enough about us. Robs, let's check in with you, my friend. What's been happening of late? And I definitely want to ask you about your commentating experience. I know you had just, a quick 8 hours on air.
Yeah, it was a doozy. I got to make my debut commentary. I dabbled with it about 6-7 years ago at some seven stuff domestically here. But this was my kind of first national broadcast. Luckily, Dallin got on the mic hours before leaving to Hong Kong to give me the best practices. Obviously, I've been influenced by one of the best in the world here recently, so I didn't want to let him down. But I got to commentate four 15s games back to back. Like, what a doozy. The first game, Dallin, it was at the top of a scaffolding during a bit of a rainstorm, Southern Vancouver Island at the University of Victoria. I'm looking at this thing, like, kickoffs in 15 minutes, OCD, like, this is a national broadcast. I've never done this. How am I going to get to the top of the scaffolding? They're trying to put a roof on. And I finally told Alexis, the organizer, I'm like, let's just not go with the roof, because like, there's no way this is going to happen. Got up there, there was no table, there was no desk, and we just got after it. So that was an awesome experience. And then we did the first two at the top of scaffolding, and then we were in the stadium for the last two. Had a lot of great feedback, had a lot of fun, and it's nice dipping my toe into things. And then I guess for me as a rugby madman like you, it was a refreshing kind of opportunity, because I really try and stay neutral in the game when I'm not on the sideline, whether it's local clubs, local universities, even national teams. I'm involved really in four different countries right now. I just want to see the game grow and the athletes grow. And so being on the mic was a real honor. And I just think, like, one thing, you know, you and your colleagues do in the World Series so well is you give love to those families, you tell the stories, and that's a lot of what I gained from you, is just spending that day with every team on the field the day before really set you up for success. And you know, athletes work their lifetime to get to, you know, those national stages or international stages. So I had the best time, and obviously a long way to go yet. How was Hong Kong?
Oh yeah, before we get to Hong Kong, I want to say I sampled some of your commentary. It was so great to hear you on the mic and stuff like that, because obviously you have such a great understanding of the game and you were able to bring it to life, which is so great. A lot of times, just because you're a good player, it doesn't necessarily make you a good coach, as you know, or a good commentator. But I thought you brought the energy. You probably funneled 55 cups of coffee so you could bring it for 8 hours. I forgot to actually ask you about the setup, because you're right, it varies wherever you are. And, you know, you may be on a scaffolding with, you know, gale force winds and rain coming down, or you could be in a really nice lux box commentating the game from. So no, I thought you did brilliantly there, and that's really cool, because it's something you could always do when you're not coaching and when you're not involved with other projects. And not just, this is the thing, you picked up the lead commentating role, which is the hardest, I think, when you start out. To be an analyst is okay, because you can wait for the commentator to bring you in or talk over a replay, which is a lot shorter. But when you call in the live action, I think that's much harder to start out. I mean, you did a great job there, pal.
Well, the last thing I'll say is, as a talent ID guy, because I got to watch every team practice, doing the homework like you told me, and then getting to see them play. And actually, it was beautiful for me. It was like the best talent ID gig, because you actually have to know every player and get to know them. And so for me, I've got a list of girls that lined up for my Premier Sevens team this spring. So it was best seat in the house, right?
So that's so great. Exactly. Great scouting, you know. But yes, Hong Kong, it was so great to finally go back and kick off the 2023 HSBC World Rugby 7 Series in style and iconic Hong Kong. First time that event was back on in 3.5 years, so since the pandemic started. And for me personally, I haven't been back in about 14 years. The last time was playing back there in 2007 and 2008. So it was really unique to go back and experience the city. And yes, there are lots of restrictions, you know, due to COVID, but the great event, I mean, they put on, got to work with a bunch of legends. You mentioned the Canadian Hall of Famer, Gareth Rees, former England Sevens captain Rob Bickerman, the Nerd, the Paul Rupert Cox, and of course USA legend Zach Test was there. So it's really cool to get his insight and comms as well, which is awesome. The tournament itself, it was great to catch up with Santi Gomez-Cora. Of course, the last former Sevens legend, Ben Gollings. But that final, man, Fiji make the final. They were playing unbelievable rugby. And then Australia, who to get to the final had to play with five players for a couple of minutes when they got some yellow cards against France, win that game, steal the game with the death. I mean, it was truly remarkable. Maurice Longbottom got more steps than the Great Wall of China, player of the HSBC final. I mean, Aussie Sevens, after winning the series last year, were able to back it up and start the series on a high. It was truly phenomenal. I don't know if you got a chance to see much of the Sevens. You probably watched every minute, didn't you?
Yeah, it was class. And shout out to the little guys. Longbottom is the best, like the pocket rocket. Every time he gets out there, he just, you know, I always say you can't have seven guys our size, but you get one of them out there and the whole game plan defensively goes out the window. Tell me about Santi. Like, when I was watching, he wasn't allowed on the bench, or what was the deal there?
Okay, so Santi, of course, being the lively Argentine as you would, with that flair, you know, which every now and again may talk back to a referee's call or that sort of thing. You're right. He was sanctioned to have to be on the side, away from the sideline for the first few games, and then he was able to be back on the sideline. I'm not exactly sure. They didn't reveal to us exactly what he did or what he said, but I know he wasn't pleased at times with the officiating, which, let's be fair, that is a big point brought up. I mean, we've seen it in the internationals this past weekend in the 15-a-side game, but sevens, it's even a bit more trickier because, you know, you're losing by 5 points, or a score here or there. That's how tight the top teams are. And if those decisions have come your way, you know, because of potentially a bad call or things like that, I think that's always hard, you know. So that happens a bit. That's why Santi, we've gotten a bit of hot water, but he's fine. He was good. He sends his regards and he's doing really well. And then, of course, the Rugby World Cup, Women's Rugby World Cup. I mean, that was the best final we have seen. And extraordinary. It was sold out. The support for it has been amazing. But the game itself lived up to the hype, which a lot of finals of the World Cup don't actually deliver.
Well, it was a 15s World Cup then, and a sevens World Cup broke out in the cup final there, like back and forth at the death. It was amazing, and obviously not biased to any country, but you always like to see the home team deliver. So many legends in that New Zealand team, sevens legends that we grew up, you know, cheering on: Ruby Tui, Portia Woodman, the Smiling Assassin, Stacey. How do you say her last?
Stacey Flula, that's right. With the Bowden Walker was here in New England. I mean, she absolutely carved it up. I mean, the way they played was outstanding, but just the personalities off the field as well, spreading the game, you know, for the young youths around, and Ruby Tui giving away her gold medal straight away to one of these young girls in the fans. I just thought it was amazing. Such a great representative for the sport.
Yeah, and I got to say, the Canadian women had a great World Cup as well. Being involved, you know, when I first moved back to the West Coast, I was working with the sevens, and on Sundays, I was taking young Carissa Norrison, she was 16 at the time, down to Sunday sessions at 6:30 in the morning to train with those women that are not centralized, that don't have the funding and the support. You know, a lot of them moved, like Gabby Semft, moved back to Canada on the West Coast, you know, got a job just so they could, you know, they basically just rallied themselves, like old school, kind of like when we played, I guess. And then they still got it done. So it was class to see how far they made it. But the French obviously were too good, too strong, but job done as far as, modern day world-class competition and performances for the world that hasn't seen the women's game. Lately, I think there'll be a lot more fans now because the standard was very, very high. And obviously those women, they got what they deserved again after a pandemic, waiting for that World Cup. And I'm looking forward to going to New Zealand. I'm about 3 weeks away, Dal. And like you, going to Hong Kong, I haven't been back to New Zealand since 2007, the Wellington Seven. So I'm heading down with our representative side, the BC Bears U18 boys, to the World School Games in Auckland in a few weeks. So we have a final island session tonight, and then a full hit up with about 60 boys slugging it out to be in that 12 to go to New Zealand. And likely a lot of those boys will be the guys on the World Series in the next 12 to 24 months too, that you'll be calling.
Well, that's so great. I remember seeing the BC Bears, which you've had Rugby Town Sevens for quite a while. A lot of the great players coming through there for Canada. But that's so cool. I mean, New Zealand, what a beautiful country. And when I was watching the Rugby World Cup, I was just thinking we definitely need to make a proper trip there and explore around and maybe get a camper van and cruise around, do that sort of thing. I mean, we've got to check in with Frank Bunch. We've got to go visit our guests that have been on the podcast around the world at some point. We'll make a family trip of it, and that'll be pretty great, pal. That's so great. You've got NZ coming up. I've got a couple of small things on this side. The Rugby Europe Super Cup hits the semi-final stage. I'll be calling the Tel Aviv Heat, taking on Lusitanos, a team from Portugal. So that'll be really interesting to see how that goes. And then I also have to move to Los Angeles. And so in the midst of packing and boxes and all sort of good stuff, but it'd be great for V and I to be back in California in the sunshine while the storm and the winter kind of approaches this side. So we've got some big things on the horizon. And then we finished New Year in Austin, Texas, the Freetail Sevens. Happens there in the bat capital of the world. So lots of good things still to come that side.
That's exciting. I guess just one last shout out for me, Matt Klimchuk, our first unofficial official Rugby Hyde test pilot guest. We'll break that out soon. But at 20 years old, he just made his test match debut on Saturday, helped Canada win in Europe after a successful Canada A trip in South America. He got the nod to go with the full team. So another Dream Leaf succeeder. Was supposed to feature in the Premier Sevens this summer, but was busy with the 15 side. So Matt, in a few years, will be a Rugby Hyde guest as he makes his way through. So congratulations.
That's so right. I saw his name there, and I also want to extend my congratulations. So great to see. And you do have an eye for these young players coming through, which is so great. You may not have the stash for it, but you certainly have the vision for it, which is good. All right, let's crack on with episode 32. Kelly Griffin, the USA Eagles sensation. You've worked very closely with her in the Premier Rugby Sevens coaching department. So why don't you tee up this episode for us, Robs?
Yeah, again, I touch on it in the episode, but Griff and I coached against her with Mexico and Canada against the USA. Obviously, USA legend, had a lot of respect for her. When Premier Sevens was launching last fall, I guess almost a year ago, I wanted to work with the Loonies and I wanted to work with Griff. So fortunate enough to work alongside her the last 2 years with the Premier Sevens Loonies women. And she's likely one of the best people I've ever worked with. It was an honor. And she just leads by example, just like she did as a player. Very selfless, keeps me in check. You know, we balance each other out. I'm wild and crazy like you, and she's calm, cool, collected. She's one of the best players in the world, and now developing into one of the top coaches in North America. So can't say enough of her. She's a mother of three. She's a head coach of a university program, and she lives her values every day. And you know, she is such an inspiration to so many young girls and boys out there. And you know, I'm glad we can share it on this episode.
Yeah, I'm so glad. I remember her playing for the Eagles back in the day, around about my era, but she carried on going all through the Olympic Games. It's so great to see what she's doing currently and that you guys have worked together as well, which is so good, you know, so can't wait for this episode.
Well, how about that matching tattoo that you that you held?
Come on. We got to add some photos on our social media of that. So we need to get you guys to take some professional shots, please.
Loonies for life. Loonies for life.
until one of you switches teams.
Yeah. Newsflash.
Newsflash. Shucks. We won't break the news yet. We'll wait for next year. All right. Make sure, folks, you connect with us on our socials at Rugby Hyde on Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube, at My Rugby Hyde on Instagram. Our website, of course, rugbyhive.com. Please be safe out there, and we appreciate all your sensational support. It's time now for season 3, episode 32. All right, Kelly, thanks so much for joining us. Are you absolute sleek sensation? One thing I'll say about you during your playing days, you reminded me of a spam caller. And that's mainly because you never gave up. You got the job done every single time. Persistent on defense, persistent on attack. What a pleasure to have you on the Rugby Hive.
Thanks. I'm happy to be here.
Let's first touch on how things are going. How's your family doing? How's life in sunny California?
It's sunny. It's like 85 degrees here right now, and it's busy. You know, we got the three kids, driving them all around, various activities. The youngest one's only in school in the morning, so I still got him hanging around with me in the afternoons. You know, that's how life is, and keeps it exciting.
And do they enjoy playing sports yet?
Yeah, the older one is doing soccer. The younger one does a gymnastics class. They both come to rugby practice with me at least once a week. So, and then our teenager is doing fencing. Is their new sport for this year?
Wow, that's cool. Well, speaking of our childhood, why don't we go back to your childhood? Let's trace it back a bit. Tell us what that was like. Did you have any siblings? And then also, what sort of sports did you enjoy outside of rugby?
So I grew up in Berkeley, California, so about 5 hours north of where I am now. I have a younger brother who now lives in Chicago. And growing up, I played lots of sports, mostly basketball and soccer. But I did like a couple years of baseball, a year of lacrosse, you know, whatever they were doing in PE, all that random stuff. And I started playing rugby in college.
Now, I heard you were a basketball star as well. Is that true?
I wouldn't call myself a star.
Well, I did. I mean, that's just my commentating self.
I was one of those people who didn't make the varsity team until I was a senior, and most people made varsity in their junior year. I mostly got to play if we were like up or down by like 20 points in the last quarter, or if one of our like really good point guards got in foul trouble, then I would like go in.
Well, I just love that you played so many different sports. I think that's so important for all of our development and skill sets as well. It transfers really well to whatever we eventually choose, you know?
Yeah. I mean, even though I wasn't very good, I still had a great time doing it. And, you know, those are my friends and I loved playing basketball and it was super fun. So I'm glad I did it.
well, not everybody's a star when they're a kid, but certainly those skill sets and learning how to be a star and learning how to be resilient is what makes somebody successful on and off the field. And obviously Griff is also super modest. That's one thing I've grown to know about Griff is she's very humble.
This is actually true. You could check with my old basketball teammates. I did make my high school hall of fame, and on the plaque it says Kelly Griffin basketball, and then in parentheses says rugby.
Amazing.
Olympics for rugby, basketball coming up the bench. I mean, I like how they put their priorities. Yeah.
So transitioning to rugby here. So how did you get introduced to rugby? And do you remember your first practice or games? And like, what did that feel like?
So my high school actually did have a rugby team. So I kind of knew, I was aware of its existence, but I didn't play. And then I went to college at UCLA, where I clearly wasn't going to make the basketball team there, but I still wanted to be like, sports was a big part of my identity, and I still wanted to be part of a team and be active. So I looked at the list of club sports they offered, and rugby was on there, and I thought it sounded fun. So I joined the team, and that was the first year that team was transitioning from being a women's club team to a fully collegiate team. So it was a pretty cool opportunity because I only had 8 returning players. So as a freshman who didn't know what I was doing, I got to play pretty much every minute of every game just because I didn't have enough bodies. Good way to learn really quick, trial by error.
So transitioning again to the U.S. Olympic program, like how far has that program come from your first day at Chula Vista or wherever you guys had your first camp to what you see today?
Well, even before then, I think just the support and is so much higher because like even before there was a residency program, they used to have open tryouts and you'd have to pay to travel there. Then you'd have to pay $600 to be there to put up your hand to be like, hi, I exist. I want to try to make this national team. And just that cost barrier is huge. And I'm very fortunate that I was in the right timing where I had a full-time job out of college that was paying me decently enough where I could, and flexible enough where I could take a week off work to go to those camps. I was playing WPL, which also was all out of pocket. So I think just the opportunities now that these players have, where there's still a way to go in terms of funding, but when you go to at least the US Sevens national team camp, those costs are covered for you, and that takes away that barrier. There's still player fees for the development, for the age grade stuff, which is unfortunate that funding's not there. But I think just the support has gotten better, and it needs to keep getting better. But that's a huge difference. And that there is a residency program, because I was fortunate to be one of the first 8 who were full time. The 8 of us moved into a 4-bedroom house. And down the street from the training center, we like went to the fabric store and we put up sheets between our rooms to make like private visual spaces, but we could all just like hear each other all the time and didn't really know what we were doing, but that's where it started.
You set the tone for what was to come in the program coming through. I also remember the early days of going to Chula Vista also with like a part-time job and then, you know, telling your boss, oh, I'll be back in a week, or if I make the team, I'll be gone for 3 weeks. You know, you never knew what was going on. That was the hard thing for sure. And then growing up, did you have a role model, folks you looked up to, potentially in your personal life or sporting life?
Yeah, I think I grew up in a good time for women's sports. And my parents were always really active in trying to find those role models for me. My parents also loved the Olympics. So we watched the 96 Olympics that happened in Atlanta, like so many hours of it. And there was the U.S. women's basketball team and the U.S. women's soccer team, who we watched all their games. And like my dad bought the trading cards of the basketball team. So just those women who were pioneering in those two sports, I really looked up to. And then also then the 99 Soccer World Cup was here, which is, you know, world famous, the taking off her bra and all that. So my dad took me to some of those games live because they were at Stanford near my house. So that was pretty cool to grow up being able to look up to those women pioneers.
And how amazing was it then for you and your family to see you at the 2016 Olympic Games? Let's unpack a bit of that. So firstly, tell us about the emotion about making the team and then leading the team as well. And what was that build up like to that event?
It was a bit messy. We had a few coaching changes in the year leading up to it that were quite messy,
right,
to put it lightly. But, you know, the players, we all had a common goal. And we all remember, like, this was the goal, was to put our best selves forward, represent rugby well, put a show on for the United States, and really should represent the sport and try to inspire the next generation. And obviously we wanted to medal, but that didn't happen. So yeah, fortunately my parents were really supportive and they actually were planning on going to Rio even before I became a full-time like possibility. They're, you know, back in like 2010, they're like, hey, we think it'd be fun to take a family trip to the Rio Olympics. So I didn't have the pressure of them being like, oh, they're coming to see me. Like I knew they were going to go no matter what. My parents actually went to the 84 Olympics in LA for their honeymoon. So they were like, it'll be like our second honeymoon. I know, crazy. So that was nice to not have that. I mean, and not that they would pressure me, but just that perceived pressure. And then they were able to come. My brother came, my wife and my stepkid and my kid who's now 8. Also, they all came. When you're in the staying in the athlete village, they have a lottery where athletes can bring in guests for like a few hours a day. And so I put my name in the lottery. My name got called. So I was actually able to bring my parents into the Olympic Village. And that's when my mom cried. She like didn't cry when she was watching me play, but like just like being in the village, which, you know, she loves the Olympics and seeing all the athletes and being able to eat in the cafeteria. So being able to do that for my mom was pretty cool.
They must have been so proud of you, particularly with their love for the Olympic Games, you said, and their honeymoon going to past Olympic venues. That must have been so amazing. And what did it mean for US rugby at the time? You know, going to Olympic Games, the US represented, you led out your country. Tell us about what that meant for the sport as well and for showcasing the game to young girls watching.
Well, I think you should go ask those young girls, really. But hopefully, we didn't medal, but we put on a really good showing. All of our games were really close. You know, we only lost to New Zealand by a try at the end, tied Australia, and they were in that medal match. So we got tons of, after we lost and we were and we lost in the quarterfinals and the best we could have finished 5th, our staff came in and was like, look, the job's not done. And they like showed us the numbers of people that were going to the USA Rugby website from like one day to the next day, because we played first before the men and there was like a huge spike in the numbers. And they're like, look, you're doing it. Like, we have this other goal of building the sport, leaving a legacy where the sport's in a better place. So that was pretty cool. And, you know, Matthew McConaughey came to our games. I feel like if he's there, you're making an impact. Yeah,
you definitely are. And we have spoken to several Eagles that have come after you. And of course, you guys set the bar. That was fantastic, you know. And I did see that great photo of Matthew supporting your side. Brilliant, brilliant, brilliant work. I want to take a trip down memory lane again. The Rugby World Cup Sevens, of course, another very important tournament. You guys finished with a bronze medal in 2013, the best the US had done. Can you reflect on that and talk a bit about what made that team so successful over that time period?
Yeah, that was probably one of our best experience, my personal best experiences at a pinnacle event. The tournament itself was not super, it was like so hot. Our last game got rain and thunder delayed for like 6 hours. But coming into that tournament, I think the team was in a pretty good place. Rick had made it really clear of like what the game plan was, what everybody's role was, and how we were going to each overachieve in our roles to win the games and beat teams. And it was, just the pieces is one of those times where we knew we could do well, but we didn't feel like pressure to do well. So we had that feeling where we were confident, but not still feeling a little bit like the underdog. Like didn't really have anything to lose and we can just go out and express ourselves. And I just remember we beat Spain for bronze in overtime. And it was like crazy. Venetia McGee like got the ball, still had the legs. And what was interesting is Rick had us running a sub plan where Emily Bidewell, who's now the coach, Amazing player and coach, she would play like the first 2 or 3 minutes of every game. And her job was to just like go crazy be everywhere, blow out her lungs, blow out her legs in the first 3 minutes. And then Venetia would come in so that we had that freshness. And so then when Venetia was the one who had the fresh legs to go, I'm getting goosebumps even talking about it, to like run down and score the winning try in overtime, it was like, that was the team. Like that was Emily, like being crazy so that Venetia could be fresh. And it was just like, whoa, it worked. Crazy.
I remember that iconic photo because I was a media manager for the USA at the time, at that event covering the men and the women's event. And I remember, as you said, that downpour was horrific. You know, play was delayed. And then you guys finally picked it up.
Yeah, the field, like, I think they had like put real grass over artificial grass. So the field was like puddly, squishy mess, but we pulled it off somehow.
Epic moments. Well, thank you for taking us through that. I remember that very, very special moment for US rugby.
Sluggo. We're going to touch on him in a bit, but loved his brain and just his style as well. He liked to take chances and sometimes they worked. Obviously, in that moment, they worked really well. Now you're a coach and thankfully I've had the opportunity to work alongside you over the past 2 years, but tell us a little bit about your coaching journey. How did you transition to coaching? And we'd love to hear about your amazing program in Santa Barbara and where it's located.
So after I left full-time residency, I moved to Santa Barbara and I wanted to still try to be in the player pool. I didn't feel like I was quite done, but I, for family reasons, was done being in residency, ready to sort of move on, but I was still holding on a little bit. So when I got to Santa Barbara, there wasn't really a competitive women's team here, but there was a competitive men's program that Kevin Battle started called Santa Barbara Rugby Academy. So I reached out to him and I was like, hey, can I train with your boys? And he's like, yes, but can we also start a women's program? Because I've been wanting to, and I know players will come to play with you. So I kind of took on a role with that program as a player coach. I mean, and before I had done just like coaching at youth clinics and, you know, kind of one-off events rather than like a season. So that's a little bit different. And so it started there. I was doing player coaching with that program. And then when I was ready to retire from playing, it just sort of happened that UCSB, the local university here, their coach was leaving. And I was like, oh, the fates have aligned. So I applied for that position and it's a club sport. So actually the players hire the coaches. So I interviewed with all their players and some of them had played for me at the rugby academy. So they already kind of knew what I was about. And so I've been coaching them. This will be my fourth year with this program. We're a university club team, so we're under the recreation department. We travel, we play the other big schools in Southern California, as well as a few schools in Arizona and BYU in Utah. So that's a fun road trip to drive out there. It's really fun. The players are mostly new to rugby. We get a handful who've played before. So it's different than like the loonies where you're more coaching like strategy and trying to get them to figure out how their different skills match together in a short time frame. But I'm really get to take these raw athletes, teach them the fundamentals, teach them the love of the game, teach them the culture of the game and build a team together over the season.
Yeah, that's coaching. That's coaching 101 is when you actually have to start them up and build them and give them all aspects. And for me, like you, I love working with the top end and also, you know, the grassroots. So that's incredible.
Their learning curve is so high. It's super fun to see them. Those like you get light bulb moments in every practice. It's great.
And then also the location. Tell us about, obviously it's in Santa Barbara, but whereabouts in Santa Barbara as far as what's in the front yard?
Santa Barbara is a pretty small town. I can see like the ocean. It's wedged between the ocean and the mountains, and you can pretty much see both from wherever you are in town. But UCSB is right on the coast. We've got our own beach on campus, and it's a pretty amazing location. It rains a couple times a year, sunny, warm.
Well, it's a great place to be. Kelly, winter's coming here in New England and it rains for 4 months and it's cold and it snows. So yeah, I'll be seeing you in Santa Barbara, I think.
In a couple weeks. I mean, we're in a little bit of a drought, so we could use a little more rain, but not too much more.
Yeah.
Dal and I are going back to school, so we'll see you next September.
school starts in October. We're on week one right now.
Holy.
Oh, wow.
We had our first training Tuesday and we have our second one today.
Nice. Extended summer in California. It's perfect. Yeah. All right, we'll go a bit deeper into your coaching. How would you describe your coaching philosophy?
So for my coaching philosophy, I like to encourage the players to figure things out as much as possible on their own and analyze their own mistakes and figure out what they could do better. It's definitely a balance, especially with really new players. Like, they just don't even have a base of knowledge to work off of. But trying to do a lot of like open games, like keep away and games, just figuring, helping them figure out how to do space. Obviously with like technical skills, like how to pass the ball and scrummaging, you need to be more specific and there's less trial and error there. But like on Tuesday, I had a bunch of new players. We were just playing a keep away game. So there were like a moat in the middle, three players there and like four on each side. And they're trying to get the ball back and forth as many times. And well, there was one group who was just like standing still and not moving at all. And so then I'm like, okay, are they going to figure it out? Like, they didn't figure it out. And then, okay, you guys, you have like 30 seconds with your team to like figure it out. And I heard them and someone say, wait, are we allowed to move? And someone else was like, oh yeah, we can move. And then the next time they're so much more successful because they were moving, so rather than just standing. So the defense had to move more and they're able to find more spaces. So just trying to set them up with that, like activities like that.
And then how is it going this season? How is the team progressing?
Well, we've only had one training.
Yeah.
So we've had a lot of progression in one day. but it's looking really good. Last year, 2 years ago, was COVID and our team got totally shut down. We were only on Zoom. So last year coming in, we only had four returning players. So there was a lot of newbies who needed to get caught up to speed of what even a rugby ball was. Last year was definitely a rebuilding season. This year, we've got, you know, a lot more returners. So just the level yesterday was so much higher. And it was the returners are, you know, mentoring and starting to help the rookies, which we didn't really have that last year, that peer-to-peer learning, because everybody was pretty much new.
And Griff, is it just you? Do you have another support staff working with you? Because I remember when I was coaching at college, it was very tough because, as you mentioned, you've got some returning players that, you know, bring an element of rugby experience. And then you've got the brand new folks who that don't even know they need to be backwards passing and that sort of stuff. So how does it work with you?
So I'm the head coach. I'm the only paid coaching staff. And then I have a volunteer coach. Her name is Fox. I don't actually know what her real name is. Katie Jackson. Okay, I guess we should have that.
But that's good rugby for you. Just know people by their nicknames and don't even know the real name.
Yes, I have this great assistant coach. Her name is Fox. She actually played for UCSB. We played against each other when we were in college. But she's still in town and she's playing for the local women's team. So she comes out and helps. And she's coached little kids before as well. So she's great to have. To help with those fundamentals and just have a second person there. Our school is pretty great. Not all schools have this, but we have a full athletic training staff to help with medical and also a sports performance staff who does their S&C. So I don't have to worry about those things.
And is there any future loonies in the squad?
Yeah, maybe. Got a couple who got some quick feet and some good rugby IQ with some potential. We'll see.
I love it. All right. Well, just curious for your development, like what coaches have influenced you during your coaching journey and why?
I mean, I think any coach who I've been coached by or coached with has definitely influenced me. Just taking the pieces that I think work well and taking the pieces where I think didn't work as well and deciding how I want to turn those into my own coaching. The rugby coaches who have coached me the most was Rick Suggett, because I was with him for almost 4 years and, you know, in a full-time environment. So I think he has been a huge influence on me. And then Kathy Flores, I was fortunate to be coached by her when I was playing for the All Blues before going to residency, and like her calm demeanor and the way she presented things, I think was really, like, I remember having deep thoughts around her being like, oh. And then growing up, the basketball program at my high school was really strong. It was coached by a coach named Gene Nakamura. He had been there for a long time and is a really great coach. And the coaching staff there was really supportive. There was this guy named Herb who, even though I was terrible, he would always like stay after and like pass with me or make me play one-on-one with him to try to get better.
Yeah, those little touch points make a big impact with kids and anybody really. And it often doesn't take much. It actually takes quite little to keep somebody motivated, but you have to go that extra mile. And for those that don't know, obviously Rick Suggett, Canadian coach, coached Canadian men and women, 15s and 7s before you know, his probably his biggest role, which was with the USA Women, and he was larger than life. So, you know, we all have different Sluggo stories, and I think probably 90% of our guests from around the world have a few Sluggo stories. Sometimes for better or worse, or people like me have some nicknames we'd like to forget, but came from a ridiculous moment that when I think about it, makes me smile every time, and definitely has influenced all of us. So what were some of your fondest memories of Sluggo, the larger than life man, and what were some of the lighter moments?
Let's think. There's so many. I think one of the things that I have taken from him for my coaching is that he had so much variety in practice. Like, we would practice the same type of skills or whatever, but in so many different scenarios. Just, we're like, okay, on the things, it says like conditioning games. We're like, that could mean anything. That could mean we're starting on cones and we're in a breakout situation and we have to score within 3 rucks. That could mean that we are just straight up running up and down and then needing to execute some sort of passing thing. That could mean that we are carrying each other up and down a hill. That could mean that we're jump roping. So it was just whatever was written on our schedule, like there would be some sort of rugby related title, but we would never know what we were actually going to get into until we got there. And that made it, for me personally, I know not everybody likes that. Some people like to have a plan and be able to mentally prepare and like set out their goals. But for me, I really enjoyed that because it kept me on my toes, which you have to be able to do when you're playing because you never know how the game is going to go. And it made it kind of fun and exciting. And I was like, well, I don't have to stress about what we're doing because I don't know what we're doing. And I'm just going to show up and try my hardest and work my tail off until he blows the whistle. And that was one thing when he would run practice and then he'd finally be like, all right, that's enough. That looked good. He'd blow his whistle and he would just, there was no like closing chat. He would just walk up the hill because we practiced at the bottom. I don't know. You probably know Dallin on field 4, and he would just be taken off the hill and be like, oh, well, I guess that whistle meant we're done because he's walking away. And then he would leave us to debrief among ourselves. And he would, you know, talk about what we would do in like a meeting later, but at the end of practice, he was like, and we're done. See ya. Yeah. So that's more of a practice moment. I don't know. Traveling with him was always a hoot because he was afraid of flying and would take anti-anxiety medicine and then like be all loopy and just be singing and dancing, pushing the luggage cart in circles around the airport one time because the drugs made him a little bit loopy. So that's a fun memory, I guess.
Oh, that's hilarious. And did he have funny ways, like as Robin said, you know, nicknames and a couple of funny ways to fire you guys up and make some jokes?
Oh yes, there were lots of jokes. He would always be screaming something. Some of the things would, I think, not fly today and not be appropriate.
No.
So I don't know if I want to share some of them, but I guess one that's not too bad is there was a girl who came and it was like an open tryout or open camp where they would just bring some people who they were like, oh, these people we think have potential. Let's bring them in for a week, see how they go. And there was this one player who came in and the first thing we did was a fitness test. And during the fitness test, she stopped halfway and threw up, threw her cookies. And then the rest of the week, like, didn't participate. I'm not, to this day, I'm not exactly sure why, I'm sure, but she didn't participate the rest of the week. Needless to say, I've not seen her ever again since. However, from that day on, whenever Rick was referring to this person, he would say, remember cookies? And she was referred to as cookies as what you don't want to do when you come to a USA camp.
So she was using the example further on. Yeah.
Look, yeah. Don't be right. Like cookies.
Exactly. We're just like, to get people fired up in their minds.
Yeah. Don't be like cookies. And they're like, who's cookies? And we're like, well, there was this girl who came and then she threw up and blah, blah, blah. So if you can't do the fitness test or, you know, come and participate is the moral of that story.
Yes. Exactly.
And the way he got to us was don't be like cookies.
Great. Well, so as you said, you know, you've taken some of the best parts, you know, from these coaches that you work with over time and coaches that have coached you. So you personally, what are your future coaching goals?
I mean, I love coaching. I don't get to do that full time right now. It's part time and then I have another part time job. And then, so I think I would love to see the growth of rugby in this country and be able to do it full time. But that's a little bit farther down the road. And for now, I am grateful for that I have this other part-time job that allows me to coach rugby that is interesting and I enjoy doing, and they give me the flexibility.
I love it. And I'm looking forward to seeing your coaching journey unfold, because I believe just working with you and just seeing how you connect with athletes and also your experience and vision and your professionalism, that you're definitely one to look out for as opportunities arise in the future and you develop. Can you tell us a bit about your Premier Sevens experience so far and your thoughts on the league growing in North America?
So I've coached PR Sevens with Robin and the Loonies for the last two quote-unquote seasons. The first season was one tournament, and this summer we got to do three. It's been overall a positive experience. I think everybody who's a part of that league and running that league really believes in sevens and rugby in North America and are really trying their best to make it a viable professional long-term league, which I think is amazing because rugby is amazing. And I think sevens is super exciting and can really compete in the sports market here. We won the first tournament. We knew our team was good, but we didn't really expect to win it. So that was really exciting when the players really put it all together and showed up for that championship game and won. This past season was a little bit rougher. Robin and I drafted a pretty young and experienced team just to see what they could do. And we ended up finishing second overall, but the first two tournaments, we didn't win any games. So that was, I think, a little bit tough for the players to maintain that confidence, but we did some work. We got a little break, so we did some work over the break and came in with a plan, and the players really kept believing in each other, kept fighting for each other, and were able to pull off a win in that last semifinal game to finish second.
I think for Griff and I, it was really about, you know when you win you don't learn much, and when you lose you learn a lot if you're willing to put in the work. And we put in a lot of work over that time, and I learned more, I think, as a coach, like at that level, I guess, in July than I had in years, just because we had to hustle hard together. And also, you know, getting a new young team, which is what we're about, is developing and building those futures, or those future stars.
Figuring out like, okay, we have all these athletes, and figuring out where to put them and what combinations to make them the most effective was, I think, the biggest learning curve for me. I was like, oh, we maybe could have made those changes sooner. But then again, hindsight is 2020, you know, we're like, well, they also need time to figure it out if that works or not. So we'll see. Definitely a lot of learning from the past summer.
I got to go watch some of those Looney stars this evening. Go watch Krista Norston play University of Alberta. So she's been carving it up, and now she's one of the best players in Canada thanks to that experience. One thing that we have been dominating is the culture and also the coaching tattoos. But how would you describe the Looney's culture for those who haven't seen the Looney's fly yet?
There's their word for it. We fly together, I guess. So for us, it's about that learning. So yes, we want to perform. It is a competitive environment. Not everybody's going to get the same amount of playing time, but with what you're given, it's about making the team the best and making sure it's really positive. So when someone makes a mistake, it's not about putting them down. It's about, okay, like, what are we learning from that? What are we all learning from that mistake? Because we don't have enough time where everyone can make that same mistake and learn from it. We all need to learn together, and we need to have each other's backs at all times. And I think that's the key. And also just making sure everyone's having fun with it, because, I mean, it is a professional league, but they're not paying enough to make it worth being a part of it yet if you're not having fun. So making sure that it's a positive experience and that everyone plays rugby because you love the game and it's the best game in the world. So making sure that that is front and center, and that they're having fun and enjoying it while trying to push each other to perform.
I love just, you know, from the broadcasting side of things, obviously seeing the, you know, who's in what team, but also who the coaches are and things like that. So I know obviously you, Kelly, from years gone by, and obviously Robin, I've played against back in the day and used to step in like a parked car, but it's so good to see him now coaching with you, and you guys are creating such great people. And that's the great thing about it, you know, as you said. So let's go through a couple of things. Firstly, you win the first ever tournament. You promised your team, if you win the final, by the way, that you're going to get a tattoo. So Robin had never had any tattoos before that.
No.
Did you have any? Okay. So Tell us about
that
moment.
I had the Olympic rings.
Okay.
I also got because I promised Victoria Falayan because she has a bunch of tattoos and I had none. And she said, if we win the World Cup, get a tattoo with me in the 2013 World Cup. And I said, sure, Vix, like, I'll do that for you. And then we got bronze. And so I was like, whew, done. And then Vix was like, okay, if we both make the Olympic team, you'll get a tattoo with me. I said, okay. And then we both made the Olympic team. So that tattoo I did with Vix, which sort of commemorates the first time, well, my journey, and then also the first time that women's rugby was in the Olympics. And then Robin threw it down. And I was like, all right, Robin, I'm a team player. Sure, we'll do it. So now I have the Looney to commemorate the first time Sevens professional outside of the national team.
Ball there, just needs to put it out, and there it is. It's the Loonies that make headlines here at the 2021 Premier Rugby Sevens Inaugural Championship by taking the title in the women's final. And that's how much it means to the side. Massive congratulations to the Loonies and their coaches, Kelly Griffin and Robin McDowell, who will have to get a tattoo of the logo on their bodies. Tremendous scenes here in Memphis, Tennessee.
That's
amazing.
You
got the two firsts.
Yes, exactly. Okay, well, listen, let's ask another follow-up there. What's it like coaching with Robin? How many coffees does he drink a day? Because it honestly, it looks like it's 40 cups, but I can't speculate.
Yeah, a lot. Although in San Jose, he didn't have any coffee, and I think that really hurt the team. That was a mistake.
Yeah.
I put it in my feedback to the PR7s that we need to be close to at least 30 coffee shops. Whereas Washington, we were dialed in. It cost me a fortune, but I got the divvy.
And Kelly, so then what's it like working with Robin? You know, you guys obviously get on really well.
Yeah, I think we hadn't met before Mike paired us together for PR7s, but it has worked out really well. Robin, as you know, likes to talk a lot. I am more quiet and reserved, so I think it gives a good balance. And I think it just both having been coached by Rick, we have some similar philosophies, and it's been a good match.
That's great. That's awesome. Okay, now I want to switch gears here. So we always ask our guests, particularly the Sevens sensations that come on to the Rugby Hive, to select their dream teams. These are very difficult decisions, obviously. Yes. I know that. We know, because people will be left out. But let's see how you can do here. We're going to choose your best ever USA Sevens dream team. And these are players that you have played with or against, you know, with the USA. So do you have a list of seven that you can select for us?
I was actually thinking about this and I wrote it down and I was like, oh, I don't know. I'll just wing it on the fly. So I would say in terms of the players that I played with, some of those players on that 2013 team are the ones who I have a lot of respect for and I think have been really great. I'm obviously going to leave people out. So if you're left off, I'm sorry. I don't think badly of you. But I would say Venetia McGee and Victoria Falayan, both great speedsters, really strong, dynamic players. I also played against Venetia quite a bit in the WPL and even going back to college. And I always dreaded playing against her. It was terrible. So she's, definitely one of them. I definitely put Alev Kelter on that list. She's just a great, great all-around athlete, total game changer on the field. It was pretty fun being part of her early days of rugby where she had no idea what she was doing. And now look where she is now. It's pretty amazing. Who else do I got? I would put Ilona Marr, who I only played with a few times. She was coming in as I was going out and I was like, ooh, when she came to campus, like it's definitely time for me to retire. If this is who's coming in now, hand it over to the young ones because I can't compete anymore. And that was a good feeling to see that. Oh, that's four. Who else do I got? I'll do Jill Potter. She was just a great teammate, a workout horse on the field, and really an honor to play with her. I got two more. Let's see. I need a scrum half. Give me a squirrely scrum half. I'll name my two favorite scrum halves. Ooh, no, I have more than two. You guys are making this hard. I should have prepared more.
You can name two. I mean, look, you can list all three if you want to in the same position. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. Well, so the scrum halves I had most fun playing with were Katie Dowdy, Devin O'Shaughnessy, and Irene Gardner, just because they, again, were that squirrely scrum half where you don't really notice them, but you're like, man, the ball's moving good. They make these little squirrely runs. And So my list is definitely biased towards the people I played with, but I have a lot of fond memories of working with them.
No, great list, and great to see Irene as well coaching in the Premier Sevens also. Okay, so now it gets even harder as well, because now you've got to select the players you played against on the Sevens World Series or at Olympic Games or wherever you met the opponents. You've got to name your dream team, your top seven.
Okay, this one I think is a little bit easier because okay. I was just like, who would I always... I'd be in the defensive line and I would look across from me and I'd see them and be like, gosh, darn it. Why are they across from me? So that one is like a little bit easier because I don't know them quite as well on a personal level. And I can just remember those, like the fear, the fight or flight response to seeing them across from me on the field. So that would be like Edna Santini from Brazil. I don't know if you remember her. I would say Sarah Goss, Portia Woodman, clearly. Michaela Blyde, Bizot, Kamidova. It's a lot of forwards. I ended up facing against a lot of forwards, being a forward myself. Let's see a couple more. Charlotte Klaslik. She could just zoom around me and I look silly.
And she was still doing it right now at the World Cup in Cape Town. Yeah.
I know. Kind of crazy. I never really liked being across from Sharni just because she's such a power runner. And I mean, she's still playing now and is being a great leader. And then that's seven, right?
Yeah, I think so. Those are powerful names. Powerful names.
Like I said, easier to just like go back to that, you know, primitive fight or flight response.
Yeah, brilliant. A brilliant dream team. You'd love to see them in action with you as well.
That fight or flight response for Dallin and I was everybody we faced on the World Series. We're just going to... wrap up, last question here, but what advice would you pass on to any younger players listening to the podcast who strive to also represent their country or chase anything they dream of?
I would say play as much rugby or whatever your dream is. Do as much of it as you can and take every opportunity that is possible for you. Like my journey into high performance rugby really started in my freshman year of college when somebody was like, hey, there's a regional all-star camp. Do you want to go? And I was like, I don't even know what regional all-stars camps are. And they're like, oh, we don't really know either. Just get in the car. And I was like, okay. So I got in the car and I made this all-star team. And they're like, guess what? We're going to Minnesota during finals week. And I was like, okay. So I called my parents. Like, guess what? I'm going to miss some finals and go to Minnesota. And they weren't super happy about it. But I moved my finals around and made it happen. And it's really just taking all those opportunities. And every time there was one of those USA open tryouts, I would just show up. I went to like three of them before I got selected for anything. And it's all about just showing up and trying to do as much as possible to get better and put your hand up.
Well, Kelly, you certainly put your hand up and honestly admire you for leading by example. And as you're right, rugby provides those opportunities like a passport to see the world and make friends and cross barriers and that sort of thing. But it's been fantastic to follow your journey. I love all the coaching you're doing right now. It's brilliant to see more tattoos assembling on your body. We'll see how that goes.
We'll see.
I believe there's a Looney's call. Can you give me the Looney's call?
Oh, I don't know if I can do it on the pressure. Nope. Almost. There we go.
Fantastic. So we'll cut out the first two and we'll edit just to the third one.
Perfect.
So after my second season with the Loonies, I was up in northern Saskatchewan on a family trip out in the middle of the lake. Like basically the logo, the full logo of the Loonies design is the setting for like northern Saskatchewan lakes. And we're out there fishing. Again, doesn't matter where I go in the world, I don't catch anything. And I can hear these loonies calling to each other. So there's like loons on the lake and then loons like in the hill, in the trees, and they're calling across this massive lake. I was just basically, you know, my tattoo was firing. Like it was all happening. I just need a Griff there to call back to them and let them know we're here.
All right. Well, thank you for having me, you guys.
Brilliant. Well, thank you so much for
your time. I
got
to go do school pickup.
Amazing. Thanks, you stop.
Yep. See ya.
Beautiful.
Bye, Griff. Thank you.
Cheers, Griff.
Also, never stops talking, does Pettinato, but I suppose that's the job of a scrum off.
Set.
He feeds. Five out from the own line. Satutu picks up, finds Jordan. Jordan. Skins one, back to Hoskins Satutu. Here comes Pettinato. Back of the inside, Barrett. Oh, not even Wes Craven could have directed that. It's frightening from the All Blacks.
Thank you for listening, you sleek sensations.
If you haven't already, please subscribe to Rugby Hive Podcast and catch us on all the socials at Rugby Hive.
We appreciate your support. Be safe out there, and we'll see you soon.